Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 83 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers and founders like you sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's top experts. And today, I have Connor Bradley. He is a growth manager at Jobber. Now, when I first caught wind of the trend of companies building growth teams, I probably had a similar reaction to a lot of people. Wait a second, isn't that everybody's job, like sales and marketing team, to grow the company? So what's the role of growth team? Then, of course, the follow-up question is, how about product managers? Aren't they thinking about how to grow adoption of the products too? So in this episode, Connor Bradley, he was actually the first growth person hired at Jobber, and he grew that team. He shares exactly what the growth team does to add value to product, demand gen, customer success, and marketing team at Jobber. In episode 83, you'll learn first, how do you integrate the growth process in the whole company? Second, how a small growth team can actually make a big impact in a company with more than 160 employees in two different offices. And third, how does a growth team work with product, demand gen, customer success, and marketing teams? Before we jump in, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. These folks helped cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. Thank you for the sponsor for this episode, Referral Rock. It's a SaaS that helps businesses like yours unlock all the referrals you are missing out on. So stop waiting for word of mouth to just happen while letting those precious referral opportunities go to waste. Find out more at referralrock.com/growtoday, or you can find that link in the description to start a free trial or get a consultative demo. Stay tuned to hear more about Referral Rock later in the episode and the special offer they are giving you today. And if you're interested in getting an ad-free version of this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/growtoday to become part of my Patreon supporters. You get each episode at least one day before anybody else. You also get access to a private Slack group and also have video AMA calls with me if you'd like. Go to patreon.com/growtoday or find that link in the description to support the show. Well, enough about me. Let's jump in with my chat with Connor. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to chat with Connor. He is a growth manager at Jobber. How are you doing, Connor? How are you doing this morning?
Doing great, Ramo. Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to chat.
Yeah, I'm really excited to chat. We met up for coffee and there was some stuff that you mentioned that I had to get you on the podcast to talk about. You know, you're talking about how people should think about growth teams differently, but I'm jumping ahead of myself. I just maybe, can you share a bit of your story of how I became a manager of growth at Jobber? And yeah, and maybe what is Jobber for people who are not familiar?
Yeah, sure. I'll just kick it off with what Jobber is. Essentially, Jobber's home service software. So what that means is you think of any like plumber, landscaper, tree care, business owner, and basically they're going job to job. They got a binder full of paperwork, full of invoices and quotes. They're losing things. They're not catching up with clients. They're not getting paid. And basically Jobber solves that problem through a web and mobile app. We put that all in there, get them more organized, get them paid faster, get them more efficient, and you know, get them home to pick up their kids from soccer practice, basically. That's kind of a value prop that we service. We've been in business for quite a long time now, seeing tremendous growth over the last couple of years. And my piece and my part of that company is basically started 4 or 5 years ago, actually. I started the company when it was about 30 employees. And that was in Edmonton, Alberta, when I lived there previously. And that was kind of like the chaotic marketing role, the Swiss Army knife marketing role, doing everything from like looking at trade shows, looking at partnerships, looking at social media content, all of those things. Whatever was needed, I was kind of putting my hands on. And then, you know, my partner got into chiropractic school out in Toronto after about a year. And, you know, life happens, things need to move on. And I actually had to end up leaving Jobber. And I worked at a couple other startups out in Toronto, basically then moving my skill sets away from the top of the funnel, where Jobber previously was very content heavy, very like at the top level, and moving more into that demand gen type role, campaign related, like attribution, working in Salesforce, revenue driven marketing. And I worked at a small startup called Pressly. And then that company got acquired by Vision Critical and worked there for a little while. And then Jobber actually opened an office in Toronto. And I absolutely love working for this company, so I couldn't resist another conversation with them. And I ended up coming back. So I'm labeled as a boomerang employee, which there's actually quite a few of us, which is pretty cool. And now I work out here in the Toronto office on the growth team, which was born from our director of marketing, Nick Keiko, was really pushing to have a growth team at Jobber. Had gone through some reforge work with Brian Belfour. I'm sure some people listening would be familiar with that program, and pushed the company to think about a team like this. And I was the first hire for that team. And it's been 2 years since then. And now we're running and still trying to figure it out. But we've seen some pretty cool success so far.
Pretty cool that you pretty much pioneered, or you kind of crafted what the growth team's mandate is. And I'm curious, what was that originally? Like, what was your objectives at the get-go of why the growth team was built?
Yeah, so I think it really centers around like that intersection between marketing, engineering, and design, and what that truly means and how to work cross-functionally together. And generally, obviously, the biggest business problems probably involve most of those departments. And to kind of have a small, lean team that actually is like all cross-functional, we're not matrixed out, we don't have different backlogs, we don't have different systems, we're all in one unit, which is would be this growth team that has two engineers, a designer, and myself. And we're able to basically look at that funnel and approach it with a scientific approach, is what we would call it. Looking at the data across the business, understanding where those gaps are, and then driving forward through user research and like a lot of experimentation, and trying to demonstrate that at the company level so this can be more widely adopted by other departments. So we kind of, doing a lot of discussion, we kind of ended up with a mission of like pioneering this new approach to growth and hoping that it can be adopted and applied by all company departments to think more with this approach of being a little bit more scientific in how we make decisions and how we validate our assumptions.
So that's great objectives. What were the things that you originally did to kickstart this? Did you start with documentation? Like what were some of the stuff that you kind of did as a team to kickstart off this whole growth process?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was really like diving into the theory and the data of the business and how we wanted to view Jobber as a whole. And a lot of that was kickstarted with like, what is an active user? What is an active account? What does it mean to be successful in Jobber? And defining those North Star metrics and really understanding the input metrics that ladder up into that output metric to create a model that we can optimize around. And to be transparent, we're still working on it. Things still change. You know, we challenge that metric all the time and we're trying to make it as crisp as possible. And once we get those metrics, though, we can rally around that and look at everything that ladders into that and making sure that we're getting that to the best possible place. So really with the growth team, we've been looking at everywhere from those pirate metrics of acquisition, activation, retention, referral, and then monetization, the revenue piece. Where do we want to play? What matters most for the business in the next 3 months? Okay, say it's acquisition. All we're focused on is experimentation on those gaps and trying to increase conversion rates. Everything from, we have a 14-day trial, everything from starting a trial, from what that experience of that trial is to putting in that credit card. And we'll just try to fill in those gaps. So getting the framework of the data first is super important. And to be honest, it can be very difficult, pending what you have built. And then you kind of like dive in and actually have deliberate work towards moving those numbers.
Is that where you focused on in the beginning? Did you, I'm really curious, where was that gap like 2 years ago, where was the gap in that funnel?
Yeah, 2 years ago, we got excited about the activation piece of it, which was essentially they had started a trial. We had really good growth, really good inbounds coming in. But them seeing value and seeing like the time to value problem and getting them excited about the product and getting them like activated, answering the phone call. It's a little different in our business because we do have a pretty big sales org as well. So balancing the phone call versus the self-serve experience, how do we mesh those together and make that feel cohesive and like not interrupting them or their momentum in learning about Jobber. So that was an area that we focused on quite a bit. And it was really interesting because we did a whole bunch of experiments around there. We didn't really, you know, we were kind of just netting out zero. We wasn't seeing a lot of significant results. But what we did at the company level was educated. And that's one of the things that the growth team does, that like, this is a thing that we should care pretty deeply about. And then, 2 years later, we now have designated teams looking at these flows on an ongoing basis. And then now we've kind of shifted in the last little while to the acquisition piece, everything from like switching a landing page, like at that very basic level to, once they get into that product, trying to get them to put that credit card in. So yeah, that's kind of been the journey so far. And we've just been trying to experiment across the funnel to learn about the different challenges and tensions we feel at the top, and then also with our current base of paying customers as well. But at the end of the day, like, to answer your question, like, really all of our experimentation was around Jobber's like a full suite like of features, right? And that's can be the tension. It's an amazing program once you get going, but there's quoting, there's scheduling, there's invoicing, there's payments. Why did you come here? What was your intent? And so trying to find that out has been a challenge for us. And so, you know, you can straight up ask them, you can try to predict what most people should see and what people should learn. And, you know, we're still working on it. There hasn't been like the true and true solution. And I think activation is an ongoing thing that should never die. And so I think our experimentation was built around getting them to understand what this is, what that end value is, because we knew there's a friction point at the end of, there's a light at the end of the tunnel that's really great for you. But we're starting off at square one, and your entire business can run on this software. So that commitment is a pretty big commitment. And so we want to acknowledge that, but we also want to get you excited about what that light looks like. And so once you can understand that value at the end of that tunnel, maybe you'd be willing to put some work in with us, and we'll help you along the way to get you there. And so it's a lot of it. It's like that snowboarding analogy where it's like everyone who starts snowboarding, you know, your buddy's going to tell you, like, you're going to be on your ass like all day. You know, it's not going to be a great day, but I promise, like, if you keep going, this can get really fun and you're really going to enjoy this. Yeah.
That totally makes sense. Yeah. Were there any specific stuff that you implemented in the beginning that you can like talk about, like maybe in-app messages or any email changes that you made to really improve that activation?
Yeah, well, pieces of it is like thinking about like multi-platform. Like obviously we have a desktop software as well as a mobile app. So really simple interactions, like sending a text message after 5 minutes of them signing up, telling them about the mobile app and how it can optimize, you know, your workflow for your field workers, and make sure you explore that as well through your 14-day trial. You know, those little things when you sign in on multiple platforms can increase conversion rates at a really interesting rate. And then, you know, on the flip side of that, we are thinking about, you know, like on the desktop piece, we're still trying so many things, to be honest with you. It's like, am I going through everything we've tried in my head? And it's just like, my mind's about to explode. So I can't speak to any specific examples because they're probably not worth mentioning because we move so fast, they're so quick and dirty, and then we're just trying something else and nothing's really hitting at a statistically significant level. At the end of the day, we're learning about our users at a very high rate, which is valuable in itself. We have assumptions around, like, if you give them something to do, will they do it or will they ignore you? That's a learning right there. Okay, so then the next experiment is like, well, what should we get them to do if they do that? And what is valuable there? So I think, like, I don't know if that answers your question. We've been it's a bit of chaos, but at the end of the day, that's why we work on it.
I want to talk about that chaos because the growth team is based out of Toronto. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then the mothership or the headquarters is in Edmonton.
Yeah.
How's that dynamic? Because I find, especially a cross-functional team, it's hard enough to be cross-functional when there's like barriers because, oh, your product, your engineering. But I think it's a little bit harder if you're physically apart from where the people that you need sometimes help from are not physically there.
Yeah, so it is a challenge. Like, I think that's been acknowledged that for any company that has multiple offices, it's not the same when you have somebody near you. You could just walk over behind their desk and have a conversation. But at the end of the day, like, we have some like tactics in place to try to engage with the Edmonton office and specific key stakeholders that are involved, and we're experimenting in their area. We want them included. So a lot of it becomes iteration and trying to get them involved in meetings as much as possible, leveraging tools like Zoom and Slack to the best of our ability, but also making sure that, like, if I go to coffee with my team and we're talking about somebody's area, that when we get back to our desk, we don't like not tell somebody that we had that conversation. You know, we try to be very careful about, like, you know, if we're having coffee and working on a project with somebody, like, don't talk about new ideas for the project. Because there's nothing worse than being in a meeting and someone from Edmonton being like, okay, so you've made this decision. And so I wasn't having an Americano with you. I couldn't say anything, you know? So I think that's a big piece of it as well. And then we do little things to try to engage and target, you know, specific stakeholders in Edmonton where, for example, we do a weekly growth exploration every Friday up to end the day for us. And we basically pick any topic, does not have to be Jobber related, to try to practice growth mindset and thinking. And we always bring two guests into that. A good example would be like, Facebook groups, like what are Facebook groups all about? Is that something that like, how are companies looking at Facebook groups and how are they optimizing and thinking about that from a marketing perspective? Or Gmail plugins, what's your favorite Gmail plugin? And then tomorrow's topic is like, pick any software or app, add one feature. What would you add? Why? Why is it good for the user? Why is it good for the company? And so we add two guests and then they get those touch points with us. So then when we do talk to someone at Edmonton, they're like, I know these guys, you know, we can have a conversation. I know how weird they are, how like fast they talk, but that's kind of where we can be. Yeah.
That's a cool way to kind of continue with that culture of growth, like having that discussion. How does that look like? Are the two guests outside of the growth team? And then who sets the agenda?
So the agenda rotates between the growth team. So it's myself, two engineers, and a designer. So every week, someone else has the topic that they need to come up with. And then it's also their responsibility to pinpoint and add two guests. So if there's one that might be more tailored to like, we did one around physical onboarding, like a physical product. What's your favorite onboarding experience? And, you know, we bring in PMs that are looking on activation, working on onboarding, and we bring them in that are, you know, maybe located in Edmonton, and we can have a really cool discussion about that. And then generally at the end of those, they always seem to rotate back into Jobber because we all thinking about Jobber, and you know, we try not to, but I have a really hard time with that. Yeah,
I can imagine.
Yeah.
The other thing that I'm really curious about is that, you know, with growth being so cross-functional, some teams might be threatened that you're like, oh, that's, you know, you're touching my code, you're touching my product. Like, how was that in the beginning? Or was that even a problem? Because like, you're like almost this ninja SWAT group you're touching people's stuff and you might get your hand slapped.
Totally. I think that's a common theme in a lot of things you read about growth teams is like, you're going to piss people off. And I think at the end of the day, that like the growth team at Jobber has been a little bit different and we prioritize just acknowledging how we work and how we're going to work. And we have agreements with the PD team, with the marketing team on how we validate and how we work. And to give you a little piece of what that means is like, we don't own any code in Jobber. Like the growth team has, it's known fact that if we are in your area, whatever we build will not be kept. And there's a handshake agreement with PD about that, the product development team. So if we build an experiment and we're like, this really worked and this is a valid learning and we should do something about it, we're pairing with that team. We're taking that code out and they're building it to that quality assurance level that they believe they can bring that to an even bigger impact that can be felt at scale. Now, the tension there can be growth's doing all this cool stuff and they're just like messing up my backlog now, you know? And I think that's a common theme as well. And so to mitigate that, we bring those PMs in as early as possible. They're ideating with us, they're brainstorming with us. So they don't feel like they were detached from the idea itself. They were a part of a team that helped validate something for them. So really at the end of the day, like we're a glorified research and dev team for a lot of teams. And generally we tie those to growth opportunities, obviously.
That's really important to bring them in early so that they can, I guess, see the value of the work you're doing, but also see the potential, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
I want to talk a little bit about what we chatted before, where you said that, you know, that you don't believe quote unquote growth should be a role. what do you mean by that? Yeah,
I think like when we're thinking long term, like down the road, I think growth has been this wave of like excitement. Silicon Valley's created have a growth team, have a product led growth team, you know, OpenView, AppQs, all these content is all around product led growth. And I think it's been an interesting wave and it's created new job titles, new things, and everyone's kind of created this culture around it. But I think the end state at the end of the day is like we need truly cross-functional teams that are tied to output metrics that lead for growth, whether that be, you know, activation, acquisition, retention, et cetera. So for me, I don't love the word growth, yet I am like the manager of the growth team here at Jobber, but I don't love it. I think it's better to label these teams on what they're really doing, because growth is a very general concept. There's a lot of teams that work very hard on the growth of the company. So if you label somebody a growth team, luckily at Jobber, we don't have this problem at all, but it can create questions like, I don't get this team, like what we do that, but you know what I mean? And that can create this weird conversation. So I think the long term for me is like, I prefer like an activation team where the output metric is all about the percent of trials that activate within 14 days, or, you know, the session to trial team, or the, you know, the 3 month retention team, or the 6 month long-term retention team. But they approach it the way that, you know, my team has been proven in this scientific approach around validating and experimenting and learning as quickly as possible. A lot of it for me is the branch of like, I think where people get confused is like, what's the difference between growth and product if you have engineers on a growth team? A lot of growth teams are just marketing teams, but ours is cross-functional with product resourcing. And the one thing I usually point to is this guy, Casey Winters, is a pretty famous growth dude. He works at Eventbrite right now, previously Pinterest, has a great blog that I recommend people check out. But he does a great distinction between growth and product, where product is adding value to our customers. They are adding features. They are making the product better. And the growth team is connecting people to the existing value. So we're looking at the opportunities and the stickiness metrics and the things that we believe are important for a customer to do. And we're connecting people to that value, whether it's people that have yet to start a trial or people that have been paying us for years. Our goal is to make them feel the connection to Jabber on an ongoing basis all the time. And that creates really quick experimentation, playing around with channels of communication and trying to get them looped back into the product and always feeling that value. So that's something that I would say, yeah.
That's a good difference between product and growth. I have never really thought about that. So product is adding new features to add value, and then growth is connecting current users to the current value that, you know, you're trying to engagement metrics.
And part of it for me too, this is like, to caveat this, this is sample size one. Like, this is how we do it. Like, a lot of companies do it differently. A lot of companies don't have growth teams and they have product teams that are able to do this. And they also do the connecting and the adding, and they have dual purposes. But we have a distinction right now, and we'll see where we end up, where maybe at the end of the day, a growth team doesn't exist at Jabber. That could be an end state. And so there's a discussion to have at companies pending your size and when you're starting this idea of growth on, you know, do we do an independent approach of growing this team independently in this department? Or do we do a hybrid approach where things are shared, there is growth, but then we have the matrixed in engineers and designers? Or do we fully embed into product and we are a part of product and that's how it's viewed? So it's more of like org design chat than anything. And pending where you are as a business, if you have a huge product org, it can be hard to integrate growth in. So it can be smart to do like a really small team to the beginning to validate what those look like, versus if you're really new, maybe 50 employees, you know, 40 employees, you could start right from the beginning and not worry too much about the organizational debt you've created in the past to try to like go through that change management. Yeah.
So your growth team at Jabber is connected to product, and is that correct?
Yeah. So basically how it ladders up is I report into our chief revenue officer, and then the two engineers and designer like report into me. And so that's that side of the org. So we're not technically a part of product. And so like, we're kind of like on the outskirts, but there's this line, but the line isn't that real. Like, we still feel very much a part of product. So I guess it's kind of funny when you think about it, where we're almost pushing that org line. It's just like, it doesn't matter. I think we exist, and we exist across other teams. And we try to make sure that there is no distinction that like, that's a growth thing or that's a product thing. We just need to figure it out. You know, there's no ownership. Like, let's just make sure we're doing the right things and working together. We're all on the same team at the end of the day.
So how do you make sure that become to the growth team doesn't feel like it's the A-plus team, you know, like the stuff that's working on the cool stuff? Are you purposely trying to be part of their product, the stand-ups or like their meetups? Like, what are some things that you're doing so that you don't feel apart from the product team?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously most of the product teams run sprint reviews. We make sure we have representation at the ones we believe we can have an impact in and have conversations. You know, there's all hands meetings with all the product engineers to make sure that we're involved in that. From an engineering perspective, we do a great job of like learning and development with all the engineers. So our two engineers on the growth team are a part of that. And the same thing on the design side, the design community at Jabber, our designers very heavily involved with them. So I do think they feel like they're a part of all of that. I don't see much tension there. I think that the main thing for me is trying to understand like how the product and growth teams work together and making sure that the product knows that we exist and our function and our value, to make sure that we're used as a resource for them. Because we can be a four-person team and there's a huge product org over here. they might kind of forget that, like, hey, we could talk to the growth team about that. So we try to be pretty loud about, you know, our learnings and our approach to have as much influence that we can to get them in a good place as well.
When we come back in just a moment, Connor talks about how his team shares their learnings from growth experiments back to the rest of the company, which has over 160 employees. I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Referral Rock. Now, sponsors like this help cover the cost of hosting and other tools so that we can learn from amazing experts like this. Now, your customers want to refer you. Why aren't you making it easy for them? With Referral Rock, you can design programs to automatically invite your customers and get them to share more often. They provide all the tools necessary to run a high-performing on-brand referral program. There are so many possibilities a growth marketer and founder can do with the platform. Now, don't worry, you don't have to be a seasoned marketer to use Referral Rock. Every account comes with a dedicated customer success manager that can help you put all the best practices in place that fits your business. Now, hundreds of companies like TripAdvisor, AT&T, and H&R Block have unlocked their hidden referrals with Referral Rock. Now, find out more at referralrock.com/growtoday, or you can find that link in the description to start a free trial or get a consultative demo. If you don't like ads like this, you can also sponsor this episode for as little as $2 per episode on Patreon to get an ad-free version of this podcast. You'll also get each episode a day before everybody else. You also get access to me in a private Slack group and have video calls with me every month if you'd like. You can get that at patreon.com/growtoday, or you can find that link in the description of this show. Enough about this. Let's jump back in my chat with Connor. That's one place I'm struggling right now is how do you communicate all your learnings? Are you like, So some of the stuff I've tried is putting it in Google Doc, but nobody reads it.
Yeah, right.
we use Basecamp. I post it up there, and sometimes I get a few comments. How do you integrate all the learnings back to the product and engineering and marketing so that they actually use the stuff that you figured out that they're, oh, well, you guys learned that 6 months ago. We should have done this instead of that.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we use Jira and Confluence for a lot of our documentation. So Confluence, like all the wiki documentation we have on every single individual experiment, there is a page on it. And basically how those pages are broken down is like background and strategic fit. What's the historical data around this idea? Why are we doing it? What is our hypothesis? What is our prediction? And then what did we see? What did we learn? And then what were the next steps? So every single experiment has that. So once an experiment wraps up, we finish that document, we go into our public channel in Slack, we blast everyone, obviously. Now there's an assumption that they might not read it. Who cares, right? It's just a long thing that I don't have time for. People are busy. So then we started leveraging tools like Loom, which I don't know if you've heard of, which is a video, basically record yourself. And so I'll do a quick 3-minute recap on Loom really fast. I'll just record myself and show the numbers and say what we learned. So I'll have the video, I'll have the wiki doc, and I'll also have the text in Slack about the overall learning. Post it in at channel for our grow-ups. That's what it's called. And then that kind of allows us to get those learnings. People thread, people have other ideas. In addition, we added the ability for anyone in Slack to do like slash idea for growth. So if you ever put slash idea for growth anywhere, it actually feeds into our channel and then can create a public conversation and thread around that idea that can potentially be added to our backlog or, you know, passed on to another team that we might not want to take a look at that. So it's all about being loud and understanding communication, honestly. And like we do a monthly review of our team. It's an hour long. I do the recording, you know, we record it. I put it in a channel, you know, who's watching that? So I break that down into like how you do it. Like here's 5 minutes when we talk about this. Here's 2 minutes when we talk about that. So it's just like those line items. So I'm like, look, I know you're super busy, but if you just want to see that 3-minute thing you knew we were working on, just skip ahead and watch those 3 minutes. And so it's just digestible information that can be like snackable for that people to get those learnings and then hopefully have that applied and have us top of mind on what we've been working on.
That's super cool. I'm going to go try that. Like actually creating those videos. And sorry, I missed it. How often do you create those videos? Is it after the experiment or do you do it on a certain cadence, like once a month or once every 2 weeks?
After the experiment, every time. So every experiment. And then we also, another thing that we do is every week we have like a fun fact where we look at the data of the business, we plop it in and we say, hey, you might not have known this. But here's some really cool data. And then that creates conversation. The whole purpose is to get into a growth mindset and have people thinking about growth, whether that's in their own departments or their own teams, but also with us on our own ideation, because four people can only come up with so many ideas. We need help from other people for sure.
I want to jump on that. How much of the growth team's role is educating others about the growth process? Because, you know, last time I checked, I think that was last month, you know, Jobber had 165 employees on LinkedIn. Is that about accurate?
Yep. We're nearing 200.
So 200. And then the growth team is four. So four out of 200. How much of your role, your team's role, is actually telling people this is what we should be, you know, experimenting and designing and hypothesizing and launching? It's education.
It's huge. Yeah. So like a lot of it, obviously we have accountability to optimizing pieces and growing the company and seeing positive results. But, you know, our main mission is to pioneer these new approaches that can be adopted and applied by all departments. And what that really leans on is education and learning for a lot of these teams to understand how we work. So giving visibility into that also in that channel, not just being focused on it results, but also being like, this is how we did that. Here's what happened. We just came up with an idea and we dropped everything and we did it in a day because we saw value in like understanding how to connect people to that value. And so I think it can be difficult for sure, because we are four people. There's a lot going on at a company. There's a lot of amazing things that are happening. And I think what we want to do is ensure that we're looked at as that consultant when you need it. Whereas it's like, look, we need to validate this. I'm not sure this is a great idea. That's where we want to come in and lean into that scientific approach and coach and understand that like you can do this and we can find a way to validate the assumptions you have and the assumptions that need to be true in order for you to make a decision. And sometimes that leans on qualitative research. Sometimes that leans on quantitative. There's balancing act between all of that due to volume constrictions in the business. But at the end of the day, we can get you properly tooled to make a call that isn't just like an educated opinion. And that's kind of what we are trying to accomplish at Jobber as a small four-person team.
I want to talk about that word consultant. Do you just give them advice and then, you know, educate them on the process? Or would you maybe sometimes actually run the experiment for them and come back to some of the learnings?
So we've done a little bit of embedding on different types of experiments. But the really great thing is that I think due to our ability to communicate how we've been running these experiments and our documentation has allowed for a flag to be raised every time somebody else is running an experiment to say, hey, you should reach out to the growth team. And then that gets us involved. And funny enough, like that wiki doc with the background strategic fit, all that template is being adopted across other teams organically without us even telling them to do so, which is already like significant impact from an organic standpoint. And then we can go into that and piece it out and say, okay, so like how you're looking at the data, how you're understanding this opportunity. So for the most part, anytime someone's running an experiment, we're usually involved, at least at a consultant level. In some cases, it'll be like, I don't have time to run this experiment. I wish I could. That goes onto our backlog because we're looking to validate the uncertainties in the business that can be then put into the core value of our product one day. And that's what the product teams can do for us. Because if you were to give us a feature to build, we would destroy it. It would be horrible. But give us something to validate, and that's what we're here for. Yeah.
That totally makes sense. I want to ask for your advice. I mean, you were there from the beginning. For anybody who wants to start that growth team in their company, like where would they start?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, like day one is all about building relationships with the key stakeholders that you're probably going to be working with and not siloing yourself into that cool A+ team that you were mentioning. Because if you do that, you're just going to be that person in the company who's just like, why are they working there? Why aren't they talking to us? And so if you build really tight relationships, specifically with all the product managers in the business, with marketing leaders and with sales leaders, and make sure you understand the entire funnel of the company. Make sure you understand the motivations and the reasons why people are passionate about certain topics. So then every time you're encroaching on somebody's funnel or somebody's backlog, you understand how they feel about it. So that from day one is probably the best step forward in building relationships when you get going. Once you do that, then it's an evaluation of your data, understanding the model, understanding what's tracking, what's not tracking. looking at those pirate metrics and trying to hone in on one thing. Because if you try to go full funnel, you're going to be very overwhelmed. So find a problem, whether it's activation or acquisition or one piece of it, and hone in on that for like 3 months. And then try to get into a rhythm of how you run experiments at your company. It's different for a lot of people, but if you have the right formula and the right framework, that structure, regardless of the people involved or the skill sets involved, it holds really true to what you're trying to accomplish. So you could replace me with somebody and someone could come in and be like, I get this. This is already a motor that's been running. So you kind of want to create that machine of like, this is how we run experiments. There's no other way. And then obviously those things adapt and revisit it on a quarterly basis. But that's kind of the thing. Build relationships, get your experiment framework sorted, get your data sorted, hone in on one particular problem for a set amount of time, say 3 months, and then, you know, make adjustments and work on the fly. Don't hold yourself too tight to a goal. Like for us on the team, like there's a commitment on our team that we might throw something in the garbage and start on something new tomorrow. And that is a requirement to be on a growth team, in my opinion. It's like you can deal with organizational chaos. You can design something and get very passionate. And then I can walk up and say, throw that out. We're not doing it. Here's the next thing. And they're like, yep. And there's a commitment to that. And so that's part of the fun of the growth team. And, you know, if you're not an engineer starting on a growth team, if the first hire is like a marketer or a PM and you're looking for engineers, my number one recommendation is to find engineers that are really motivated and like driven by business impact and not technological challenges. Because if you're really looking for tech challenges and to up your skill sets in the code base, the growth team might not be the right fit because, you know, we're just optimizing. It might be the simplest change that could have the biggest impact. And you need to be excited about the impact because the thing you might be releasing, you're not going to be that proud of. So that's another piece of it as the team grows and you actually understand that structure.
Another piece of the analyzing piece that you talked about is having the right kind of measuring tools in place. When you came in, did Jobber have all the right kind of things that they're measuring and all the tools they have in place to see the whole funnel? Or were you like, yep, there's the gap here. We need to install something and you have to kind of start getting data from day zero, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think every company probably feels the tension of data and attribution and allocation around like what is going on. And so, yeah, there was definitely gaps and there was also a lot of great work done. But we have a business operations team here at Jobber that like they are like the owners of data. And when I joined, we were just ramping up that team. And now it's a massive team that's done a tremendous amount of work. And the number of dashboards will blind you when you open it up. But now like the data that we have today versus the data we had 2 years ago is like, it's a huge difference. But, you know, to understand on a growth team, like you need to work within those limitations. You have to understand like, okay, the data's not right. And you just back away and like, we can't do it. You know, at the end of the day, what can you learn? What can you see? And what can you get into your rhythm into understanding how you work? Because the work agreements in your team are going to be the most important piece of it versus the actual, like how things are tracking. That'll come and that'll always be worked on. But at the end of the day, the engineers and the designers on your team need to be data focused and they need to be able to add events and add things that we need tracking in order to understand an opportunity. So we self-serve a lot of that in while we pair with the biz ops team to make sure we're doing it all right. But, you know, they need to be able to self-serve their own events because sometimes, you know, the business operations team are like, we don't need to track that at the business level. And then we're looking at a small little opportunity. We're like, we need to track that click. We need to know how many people click that. Like, do we go through a request process and then it gets done 3 sprints later? Or can we just self-serve it and add it and say, hey, can you approve this? And so we try to find that those work agreements to make sure we're working as quickly as possible.
Is there any specific tool that you're using right now so that let's say you just need to track something really quick, you just have to like launch an event on Google Tag Manager or something like that?
Yeah, Amplitude is our go-to right now. So we use Amplitude for all those types of business cases where it's like, we need this tracking. We can launch it in Amplitude. And it's been a really cool tool for us. Yeah.
I want to talk about the work agreements. I'm guessing the way you talk, you know, when you're starting in a growth team, the way you talk to product managers would probably be different on how you talk to biz ops or salespeople. How did you, what kind of things would you suggest people do, like craft a conversation around when they're talking to a product manager versus maybe a salesperson who cares about a different kind of thing?
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, it's so interesting. That's like the biggest contrast. Like the product manager might be care deeply about the customer, as they should. They care about, you know, the value of the customer, making sure they're seeing value, what their usage is, what the user research is they really lean into. And then on the sales side, they're looking to hit a number. You know, they're looking to get paid. They care about making sure there's a phone number, making sure I know this person's online, making sure that this person picks up a phone. So there's very different contrasting things there. So when you lean into sales, if we're working in sales, like we know that like, hey, say we want to run an experiment that could potentially drop phone numbers significantly in our signup funnel. And, you know, there's a conversation. They're like, look, we're going to try this. And I understand here's the worst case scenario on what we believe could happen. And here's what the potential impact is based on the conversion rate through the funnel. And so are you okay to allow us to run this for a week? And then that's a conversation. So we've already addressed their concerns of being like, we know you care about this a lot. And in some cases, we run experiments with specific reps and be like, look, we're just going to give you on target earnings because we want to get the learning. And we're in the sales team's committed with us to make sure that we get that learning. We don't want personal or like a lot of battles to happen over compensation. So let's just make sure we get this and we'll run this for 1 month. Now we flip to the PM side. It's a little different because the PM is very passionate about ensuring that, you know, it's hitting the quality assurance that Jabber holds ourselves to, which we have an incredible, incredible team that can facilitate and deliver product in a really, really incredible way. Like it's really impressive. And then here's us, you know, we walk in and we're like, here's this like half piece put together thing that we put into your product and it's working. And so that conversation with the PM is around the impact and trying to demonstrate and showcase the numbers and what it does to the business. And not saying, hey, here's your problem, we're going to go walk away and do more fun stuff. It's like, hey, a commitment to like, if you need both of the engineers to embed with you for a sprint or two to get this to happen, like we're open to that conversation. And so there's those contrasting styles, like I said in the beginning, of understanding the motivations of other people. It's just being real about it and understanding you're probably not going to like this, but here's what we did. And it's all about risk tolerance at the end of the day. sometimes it's not about the potential upside for them. In the beginning, it's about the risk tolerance. It's like, here's what could be wrong about this. And we acknowledge that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm guessing you kind of picked that up based on experience. Is it based on experience where like you got your hand slapped, or do you have any horror stories where like you made some changes and teams started shouting at you, or you've always had your T's dotted and your I's dotted and T's crossed?
Yeah, I'd say we've done a pretty good job of that for the most part. Like there's only been some gaps where a good example is like we launched a successful experiment and we are pumped. Like we're like, yes, that was awesome. And then there's that handoff. There's that handoff part. Like, well, we're not going to ship it because that's going to take too much work. And then we hand it off to a product team to deliver it. And, you know, it's our fault more than their fault, but we're just giving something in addition to their backlog. And unsurprisingly, that successful result maybe ships 3 months later, 4 months later. And we're just sitting there like, why isn't that like working? Either the value wasn't big enough, like maybe we were too excited about it and it actually wasn't that valuable, or we didn't do a good job of communicating that value, or we weren't respectful enough of like the all that work that they have ongoing. To just expect them to just put that into their next sprint is a little unrealistic. So that becomes the conversation of like, is there always going to be a handoff in your organization between growth and product, or will growth teams begin to adopt and ship code at some point in the organization, which is, you know, that thought process behind like where you want growth, how you want growth teams to work at your company.
And so what does it look like a job, or is your team shipping code now, or are you still handing it off?
No, we're not. We still, in terms of in the product, we hand it off, but we also run a bunch of experimentation on the website across, you know, paid landing pages, et cetera. Those experiences we generally can help ship.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the thought process that a manager of a growth team needs to think about is, will there be a point where we start individually adopting and like owning basically experiences, signup pages, billing pages, expansion experiences, where like we own the experiences that connect? So really, it's not that hard of tech debt over time. You're not building a feature and you're not dealing with bugs. You're just kind of owning the flows that understand that loop people back into the product or get them through into the product and acquired and with a credit card. So that's something that we're starting to have conversations about, but who knows? We might not do that. It might not make sense. But those are the types of things that you should always be thinking about.
Yeah. So the front-facing stuff, probably a little bit easier to change. Are you just basic HTML, CSS, or WordPress? Or what kind of stack are you using at the front-facing site of Jobber?
We have WordPress on there. And then we use Google Optimize for a lot of the testing across the board. Google Optimize is fantastic for people who are, it's just a really cheap way to get things going. And then once everything gets in the product, I have a marketing background. It's over my head. Like, it's just the engineer's job to understand what's going on there, right? I don't begin to pretend that I understand what's going on there. But, there's just a trust there that we know what's going on.
That's good. That's so good.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that. I haven't really thought about it as much. The handoff process. What does it look like for you right now? So do you hand them like a pitch doc or a documentation and like, this is what we learned and this is why we should do this. Here's how much work it'll take, our estimated time. Like what does your handoff look like?
Yeah, I would say like, it's all about the learning and the impact it can have on the business. So if we go after a big idea and we understand that it's going to require some cleanup, some polish to make this acceptable to be in our code base. We work with that team. We tell them about what we learned. We look through the data. We understand the long-term 12 to 24 month impact of the idea. We go through their current backlog and say, you know what? Like, what here would trump that impact? And that's like can be an interesting conversation, right? And then you can have that call and then an alignment and a good relationship with that PM that was established early on can have that conversation and be healthy and make sure that we make the right call. And so when it does get handed off, we can allocate resources from the growth team if needed. But, we're not going to pretend to scope out how long it's going to take because we're not built that way. That's not the way we work.
Right.
If you gave us the opportunity to estimate how long it would take to build, they would probably laugh at us. So we'll let the experts figure that piece out. But let us know if we can help along the way.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Do you hand off any mockups and designs that you've created during the test period?
Yeah, I think like we're always getting consistent feedback from, current people in product teams, like our designers putting together like crazy mockups really fast in Figma. He feeds them into the design channel. We have all the Jobber designers taking a peek, giving their feedback. So it's not like we're working, in the shadows, like no one knows what we're doing. So when we do get a validated learning, it's not a surprise. It's not like I didn't even know you guys did that. If we hear that feedback, we probably will have a retro and be like, that's a problem. Because like that means that no one knew we were looking at it, no one saw the value, therefore it's probably not going to get prioritized in the next little while here. So that's our own fault. Yeah.
I'm curious on your advice. Like you started off you're in marketing and demand gen and now you're in the growth team. What would be your advice for any demand gen marketers or any marketers in general if they want to get into more growth related role?
Yeah, I think, for me, it just organically happened. I got lucky. But I think like a demand gen person's just, they're addicted to the cost per acquisition, the cost per trial, the basically all the demand channels, the campaigns, the attribution, the revenue you can draw back into marketing channels, which shows your impact and what you've been able to accomplish. But I would push if a demand gen person is looking to get into a growth team that has product resourcing, push them to that next level. What happens when they're in? Do they activate? Do they retain? And so if you can bring that funnel a little bit more and just say, hey, of the people that I brought into Google AdWords, this much percent are activating and this much percent, like this is their churn rate. This is how much they're canceling. And so as soon as you get that full funnel experience, now you're thinking about the product where now you might think a channel like Facebook advertising is performing like fantastic. They're like, I'm getting so many trials. This is fantastic. But turns out they churn like really fast. Well, why are they churning? Like what's going on there? And then you, if you work in growth, you can actually do something about it. You can actually change experiences, which is like really when I experienced that for the first time, I got like really excited. I don't know if I can go back to like screen command. I'm like, wait, I can like just like we can do something and like trigger messages and have things pop up in product. Like this is incredible. So I think that would be my biggest advice is like don't just focus on that end state of having an MQL. Think about that journey when that person becomes a customer. How do they adopt? How do they actually retain? And do that channel by channel, exactly how you're doing it today. Just take it a step further.
That's really good. Really great. That's great advice. You just said something that kind of triggered. I was just about to wrap up, but you said MQL, and this is whole concept of product-led growth and PQL. I'm not sure what you think about the whole product-led growth movement and PQLs.
Oh, I love it. I think, like, obviously born from like all the HubSpot stories of all those cool like free products that they built and triggering product qualified leads. And a lot of companies like software around this are now adopting these blogs and these opportunities to like, this is the movement. And I think it's interesting. It depends for me on your product. Do you have a sales team or do you not? Is a key indicator for me. And are you a freemium model or are you like, do you have a trial model or are you like, you know, credit card required right at the start? You're doing demos. Because if you're doing demos and doing things like that, all that matters is marketing qualified leads, demographic information, lead scoring. But if you have a freemium model, you know, and if your cost and your ASP, your average selling price is like $10 per month or something, PQLs are going to matter a lot in terms of like the volume. That's a volume game versus as that increases, sales gets more involved. When do we trigger? When do we have sales reach out regardless of what they've done in the product? Or when do we have sales reach out based on engagement in the product? And what plan do they ladder up to make sense and to make it worthwhile to have a sales rep reach out? Because if it's a low price, like why would we put more cost towards that? And what's the long-term impact? So I do love PQLs. I read about them all the time. We're thinking about them at Jobber and we'll see where that takes us. But at the end of the day, like there's a lot of great case studies out there about how it works. And HubSpot's number one. If you ever want to look up content, just search HubSpot PQL and you'll find all the blogs you need.
Awesome, Connor. I really appreciate that. About to wrap up, where can people find out more about you and, you know, online, and where can people find out more about Jobber?
Yeah, Jobber's getjobber.com. If you're a plumber listening to this, please go to our website, sign up for a trial, check it out. If you're not, if you want a bunch of ads from us, you know, go ahead and check out our website. And then also, you know, for me personally, let me think here. Yeah, I got a Twitter. Yeah, I do. It's @_ConnorB. I don't tweet a lot, although I tweeted today, so it was a special day today. But if you want to check me out there, at the end of the day, if you're in Toronto and area, I'd love to have a coffee with you. Check me out on LinkedIn, just Connor Bradley, and just search Jobber and connect with me. I'd be happy to chat more and dive into some of the topics we had today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Connor. Well, that's it for this episode. So much good things about this. I really learned about how the growth team evolved at Jobber. So I just want to share with you my 3 key takeaways from Connor. First, the goal of growth is learning as quickly as possible. As Connor puts it, growth is about learning about your users at a very high rate. The way you do that is by stating your assumptions and designing a test. For example, if you give your users something to do, will they do it or will they ignore it? That's learning right there. Second, one of the goals of the growth team is to get your company into a growth mindset and have people thinking about growth. You can only come up with so many ideas with a few people. Connor says that his team of 4 needed help from other people in the company. And third, don't focus on just having an MQL. Think about the journey when the person becomes a customer. How do they adopt your product? How do they get retained? Take it a step further than just MQL or just a lead. Now, did I miss something from this episode? Share with me your takeaways from this episode. I'd love to hear from my listeners, from you. You can find me on Twitter @RamleyJohn or email me ramley@growthtoday.fm. I do reply back to all my emails. And if you do send me an email, I promise to reply back to you. Before I end, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. These folks helped cover the cost of hosting marketing tools so that I can continue to get amazing guests and experts that really you and I can learn from. So I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Referral Rock. Once again, it's a SaaS that helps businesses like yours unlock all the referrals you are missing out on. So stop waiting for word of mouth to just happen while letting those precious referral opportunities go to waste. Find out more at referralrock.com/growtoday, or you can find the link in the description to start a free trial or get a consultative demo. I also want to let you know, if you don't like ads like this, you can get an ad-free version of this podcast. You also get each podcast episode a day before everybody else, have access to me in a private Slack group, and also have video AMA calls with me if you'd like. Go to patreon.com/growtoday to sponsor this show for as little as $2 per episode. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John, and as always, keep on growing.